I'm Jody Weitz, results and success coach, and these podcasts teach you how to make significant changes to live your dreams, make a positive impact on the world, and drop your regrets. It's time for you to get spectacular. Welcome back to Your Spectacular Life. I'm Jody Weitz, your professional coach, making sure everything in your life is nothing less than spectacular. I have on the show today Andrew Ackerman. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to our conversation. This will be great. Let me tell you something about Andrew. Andrew Ackerman has launched 2 startups and invested in over 70 startups over the past 2 decades, first as an angel and then in an accelerator VC context. He has created a number of unique investing and innovation platforms for funds like Dream It Ventures and Second Century Ventures, where he currently runs Reach Labs. He's literally written the book on what it takes to build a great startup. Published in May, The Entrepreneur's Odyssey has been described as lean startup meets the alchemist. Andrew also consults on corporate innovation strategies such as CVC, accelerators, venture studios, etc., and is an adjunct professor of entrepreneurship. Wow. So, Andrew, I can say that you have really had entrepreneurship on your mind for the last 2 decades. Or before, have you always wanted to start your own business and be successful at it?
Well, I don't think anyone wants to start their own business and not be successful at it.
Well, going the extra mile and learning the lessons.
Yeah. No, the truth successful. Is, I was always interested in it. Like, both my grandparents were entrepreneurs. On one side, I had my grandfather on my mom's side. Did everything from manufacturing Zippo lighters to creating insurance products.
Wow.
And on the other side, my dad's dad would open up candy shops, like, newspaper and candy shops.
Oh, nice.
And he'd open them up in kind of edgy neighborhoods. And then as the neighborhood gentrified, he would sell it. And then he'd go like a couple of blocks further out and do it again. And having a grandfather who sold ice cream was kind of a big plus. But unfortunately, they both passed before I was out of college.
Oh, no.
But I've always had kind of the interest to do it. But I didn't really have that that firsthand, someone there to mentor me through it the way maybe I would have liked.
You mean it wasn't dinner conversation at all? Like,
so my
Andrew.
Dad was an OBGYN, so like,
oh,
the dinner
boy.
Conversation, let's just say that if we were having tomato soup, it could be an interesting night.
A good image. I don't know whether that will ever get out of my mind when I look at
I've just
tomato
ruined it for
soup.
All your listeners.
You're right. So let's take you, out of college. When did you start your own business and how did you do with it?
Sure. So it was a bit of a meandering path. So coming out of undergrad, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I was thinking I'd kind of heard of this consulting thing, but remember, this was a long time ago. There was no really internet to look at. And I figured, what? If I can get into business school, let's go into business school straight away. And I got into a very good business school. So I went. I think I was one of 4 or 5 people that actually went straight from undergrad. It was a great experience. I still don't know if that was the right choice or not. But fast forward to 1995, and I'm coming out of business school. This whole entrepreneurship thing is still like not a thing, right? If you're an entrepreneur, like, oh, so sorry to hear you're unemployed. And venture capital There was one guy in my entire business school class that I know of that went into VC, and like no one knew what Ben did. And I happened to have, I was friends with Ben. We actually used to go skiing together quite a bit. And now the irony is like I'm in that field, so now I know exactly what Ben does. But in 1995, I had no idea. So I ended up joining a consulting firm after all, and I worked there for 4 years. And then somewhere around 1999, I was on a project where we were helping a very big corporate get ready for a merger, and we were using an internet application to allow the two entities to share their information, but in a safe, blind way, so that nobody was contaminated with the other data in case the merger didn't go through. And then I remember thinking, that's it. That's what I've always wanted to do. It didn't exist when I graduated, but now it does. So I quit consulting. I moved back to New York. And very briefly, after just like less than a year of a detox, consulting detox job, I ended up in my first startup as the third founder of a company called Bunk One.
Wonderful, wonderful. And you know, it does sound like you're going back and forth, and now you're doing a number of things as a VC and working labs and recommending. Did you learn enough in those early days to really jumpstart your next startup and go into VC, or was it okay? I've learned this much, and I'm always learning on how to make this successful and how to teach people that.
You know, I every couple of years I used to look back at where I was just a few years earlier. And I used to say, I can't believe I was so naive. I can't believe I was so dumb. And then 1 year it kind of hit me. What happens when I look back and it's 5 years and I think to myself, it's not bad. You kind of had it together back then. What that means though is that I hadn't learned anything in 5 years. So I hope I never get to that point. I make tons and tons of mistakes in my first startup. I have tons of mistakes ever since. The only real virtue I can claim is that none of the mistakes I made killed the startup. So
Good.
whatever mistakes we made, we were able to recover from. And the habit of treating everything like a series of experiments has served me well, even beyond the startup world.
Great. Yeah, it really sounds like you learn, but it wasn't failure for everyone. You know, you were able to go back and figure something else and problem solve, which is really what being an entrepreneur is all about: problem solving on a daily basis and knowing, we may fail at perhaps thinking that this was our target market. We've got to do this all over again and really figure out who we are helping. And that's why I'm assuming that you've written your book, The Entrepreneur's Odyssey, is okay, you need to get this done, you need to get the foundation done. What did get you to write that book?
So it's interesting you should ask now, because the germs of the book, or the germ of the book, actually was in business school. I'd read a book called The Goal. And The Goal, for those of us who went to business school a certain time ago, was the standard book of strategy and operations. But what made it unique was it was written like a novel. So instead of being a dry, this is what you need to do instruction manual, which unfortunately so many business books still are today, it was a novel about a mid-level manager who was sent out to a printing plant to turn it around, had no clue how to do it, kind of found his way into the arms of a mentor, a consultant on an airplane who shockingly never charged him,
Oh,
and yeah,
bad
totally
business.
unrealistic in retrospect,
No.
who helped him turn it around. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, this is a much more interesting way to learn. So then, fast forward through my first startup, totally forgot about the goal. Fast forward to my years at a family office in my second startup, still totally forgot about the goal. But then I start running a Dreamers Accelerator program. So at this point, I'd done a couple of angel investments. I was starting to get some experience under my belt. I had two prior startups. And one thing I realized is as I was advising and mentoring the startups that were in my program, I could just tell them, like, hey, Jody, listen, you need to test this, you need to test that, or, I don't think this is going to work. You should try something else. Or I would say, Jody, it's interesting where you are right now. There's a different portfolio company of mine that was in a very similar position 2 years ago. Here's what their situation was. Here's what they did. Here's how it turned out. And it was essentially the same advice, but one was wrapped in a story, a true story in those cases of other portfolio companies. And without fail, the same advice wrapped in a story that the startup in my program could relate to always was taken to heart and was always acted on better and faster than just the plain advice without the wrapper. And that's when things started coming together. I started thinking, if I ever write a book about how to create a successful startup, I'm not going to do it as a simple how-to guide. There's tons of those. Some of them are horrible, some are not bad, but they're all a little hard to read. I'm going to do it the way the goal was written. I'm going to do it as a novel about a fictional startup, all the way through from like pitching his idea at an open, basically an open mic night, all the way through finding a mentor, like finding his product market fit, raising a round.
You know, that is great because we all respond so well to stories. You know, they always say if you're getting up and talking to an audience, start with a story or give a story to illustrate your point, because that's when we have much more connection and understand. We wanna find out what happens. So I'm you know, congratulations on the and I'm the dry stuff, step A, step B, but yeah. So in that book, you have a number of parts to help the person, the reader, again, understand what it takes to be successful. What are some of those parts, and did you have a problem or a challenge writing any of those parts?
So yeah, I mean, listen, I like writing. I write a lot, actually. I found this out kind of halfway through my first startup. In college, I wasn't a particularly good writer, but I guess it's how you find your voice. I sort of found my voice at my first startup. But all the writing that I'd done had generally been articles, in the startup press and the trade press. So it's 500 to 800 words. It was all my voice. So when I decided to write this book, I said, it cannot be two people sitting in a WeWork conference room looking down at a pitch deck for 200 plus pages. It has to be actual, story. And also, like, there are more than one person in this story, so they have to sound like individuals. So I had never, A, written anything more than a couple of hundred words. B, I'd never written in multiple voices. And C, now it's not just, advice, oh, listen, like your market slide is, unrealistic. It's the global market. The rest of the world's not going to wait for you. I had to actually embed that in like a plot line. So, I didn't tell anyone I was doing it. I had some ideas. I sat down. I took 20 minutes to outline the thing, which wasn't hard because it was basically everything I'd been doing in the various accelerator programs for years already. And then I went around and I just tried to like figure out what the stories would be around it. In fact, it's kind of funny. It's a the startup in the book is a fictional speech to text startup based on an actual speech to text startup. And since I was running around from meetings to meetings, I wrote about 80% of it talking into my phone, speech to
Oh
text, right into Google
my
Docs.
goodness. So yes.
And so I
So
have an idea. I'm like, oh, I got it. I want to talk about revenue models. Literally, I'm on the subway at the time. So I'm that weirdo in the corner of the subway muttering to himself. And I'm like, you know what? What if the founder were taking his son to school and they start talking about, hey, in this case, the founder's name is Marcus. So he's talking to his son, Kofi, and he says, hey, it's really, oh, sorry, his son comes to him and says, Dad, if I owned the subway, I'd be rich. And his dad's like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Well, everyone takes the subway and they go really far, so I'd make tons of money." And his dad, thinking like, "Oh, he'll be like the cool New Yorker dad, teachable moment," says, "You know, son, isn't it cool that for the same $2.90 that we're paying to go four stops to your school, we could go all the way to Coney Island if we want to?" And his son's like, "No way, Dad, that sucks. If you go further, you need to pay more."
Oh,
So that
okay.
evolves into a series, a
Oh.
discussion about revenue models from like all you can eat to pay, pay per usage. They talk about freemium, like, well, is it fair that people who, live far from the city have to pay for it? Well, maybe we give them two free rides, one to and from work or school, and the rest they have to pay for. We start talking about freemium. And the kid even gets into, "Well, gee, Dad, you don't need a car if you use the subway. So you should sell the car and give me half of what you make." So share
Okay.
savings pricing.
Give me
So I
that.
really like pushed it pretty far to get a bunch of different ideas across, instead of it being, say, me and you looking at your pitch deck and saying, I don't think SaaS is the right revenue model for you.
Very creative, Andrew. And much more interesting to understand those concepts of what every business has to consider to be successful. And it's interesting that you're bringing up the conversations, because I'm assuming we have these conversations again with the with our team members. You know, what should we do? How are we going to bring? What do we present? Etc. But this is in a much more understandable, comfortable environment or way that we can understand it.
And there's different chapters about finding a co-founder too, since you brought up team members.
Co-founders. It's like I've heard it's like the most difficult dating app you'd ever use to find a co-founder.
So I joke around that it's easier to get divorced than it is to get out of a relationship with your co-founder a lot.
Goodness,
And it's actually funny. I use the dating analogy later in the book to talk about fundraising, right? So
Well, tell me
the
more. I'm curious about fundraising and how
sure.
that relates to dating.
So in the startup world, this is one of those places where a lot of the founders, they could be really good at coding, they could be really good at marketing, but almost without exception, how they raise money is kind of a dark art for them. There's a lot of really bad advice out there. Like a lot of people say, "Oh, you should like blast cold email lots of people." And I'm like, no. Like the best thing I can say about that is, "Don't worry, I won't hold it against you because I didn't even read it. I just deleted it." Now, within that space, there are also some people who will come up to you and say, "Hey, Jody, I know you're raising the round. You've never done it before. Why don't you retain me? Pay me a little bit of money, a little bit of success fee, and I'll go out there and I will raise money for you." And that seems like, on a surface, a sort of reasonable idea. It generally doesn't work. And so this takes us to, chapter 24 in the book. I don't know. I could look it up. Where Marcus is at the bar with his buddy, and they're drinking. His buddy's in from out of town, and his buddy's like, "Yeah, I finally, like, dating is brutal. I finally decided to like retain a matchmaker." I go, "Well, how's that working for you?" He says, "Well, at first it's kind of working great, and then not so great." So they start talking about it, and he says, "You know, it was great because he finally had someone on the other side to kind of help him figure out what kind of person he was looking for, and they were taking the time to get to know him, and they were going to go out there and find someone for him." So I was like, "That's great," but then he realized as they started setting him up, and it's kind of weird matches, that they had no incentive to say no to a client. They had every incentive to take as many clients as they want, as they possibly could. So there's no screen, there's no filter on it. There's no presumption of quality other than they had a check that didn't bounce, which is kind of the way VCs perceive these hired fundraisers. And there's no perception of quality, and even a little bit of a negative signal, because and again, no offense to anyone who's used these services before, but a disproportionate number of the people who sometimes go to use the services are the ones that are, say, maybe a little socially awkward to begin with. So, by analogy, the kind of startups that are more likely to go and ask someone to help them raise money are disproportionately the one that was struggling to do so themselves either because the startup itself was not really that fundable, or because the founder just didn't get how centrally important the relationship between the founder and their investor is. That was a negative signal that they thought they should, outsource that.
Yeah, I would imagine that you really need to have a connection with whoever is going to fund you, because that relationship is locked in to the startup and the VC or the VC's company. And you need to be in front of them. You need to get the signals. What's my gut telling me? Is there chemistry?
Listen, getting divorced, firing a co-founder, getting an investor out of your company, that's levels of difficulty. Right?
I
Getting an
would.
investor out when an investor doesn't want to leave, it's near impossible.
I can imagine. Yeah, I can imagine that's really tough. What is, I love this chapter. I love the dating analogy. And what was another fun chapter for you to write? It was like, boy, I'm having fun with this. I don't want to let this go, or.
So there are two that were fun. So a lot of them, it was all fun, right? And I embedded a lot of Easter eggs in it. So like, to get different characters to sound different, I actually translated what I was going to say through other people in my life.
Oh, how interesting.
So the early on, there's a section where, Marcus has gotten advice from his mentor, Jason, who, by the way, that's an homage to John Eason, who is one of the OG, now deceased, of the New York startup investment scene. Wonderful, wonderful, very good investor. So Jason's like, everyone you thought you were selling to was wrong. You're going to sell to these people instead. And the founder's like, gee, I guess you're actually right. So then he had to go out and do customer discovery again. So he, rather than go out there and build stuff, he's taught to do what I call now the index card prototype. So, when you're looking to build a startup, you could actually just build it, spend like months in a sweat lodge just coding, or going out there and like building prototypes and having a somebody in China make it or whatever you need to do. But in an ideal world, you want to get a lot of feedback
Sure.
before you start doing any of that.
Yes, yeah.
So for the cost of, maybe $5, you get a bunch of index cards, kind of like these. And then you take a pen and you sketch on each card what the screens of your site or your app are going to look like. And you can do this there's tools online like Balsamic, you can do, but you can literally do it with a pen and paper.
Well, it sounds
And
like a
the less realistic.
storyboard too, when,
Exactly.
for a movie or a play.
Exactly. And the less realistic it looks sometimes, the better, because then the people you talk to don't get hung up on like the user interface. But then they say, let's say well, tell you in the book, right? So Marcus then goes out and meets with a series of people, and we have this conversation with a woman named Julia. Not coincidentally, same almost name as my wife Julie, who's a real estate agent, who it turns out is potentially the target market for this startup. And he says, I'll pretend it's you and I talking, right? I'll say, hey, so Jody, here, thank you for meeting with me. What I would like to do is I'm thinking about building such and such startup, but before I go out there and spend, months building stuff, I want to make sure that like what I'm building makes sense, stuff that you need. So what I want to do is I want to simulate your interaction with the app they plan to build. So I'm going to put these cards in front of you just as if it is the screen on your phone, and I want you just to interact with it the same way you would, like literally touch it if you want to touch a button, right? Or swipe if you want to swipe. And I will then give you another card that corresponds to whatever you just did, and you just go through it as if you're doing it all by yourself. Now, don't ask me questions because I'm not there when you download it. I can't answer your questions. The one thing I ask you to do differently is verbalize what you're thinking, because I can't read your mind, and that's the whole point of this. So if you're confused, like I don't really know what to do, but let's see what happens, just say that out loud. So in the book, he does exactly that. It goes through, and there's even screenshots of the cards that he uses, so that the reader can follow along.
Nice.
And he learns like, quite a bit about what features might use, or what what's confusing, what may be kind of
Great.
scary to the user,
Yeah.
or equally important, what the user doesn't use at all. Because if none of the users touch that part of
Yeah.
your index card app, then don't build it.
Right.
You don't need it.
That's a great idea. Verbalize what you're thinking. I mean, that is just very clever because you know exactly what is running through that user's mind instead of what do you like, what do you don't like, what's not pretty, what's not pretty. That's just a very black and white answer, but I'd love it if there was a drop down so I can get to X, Y, and Z menu. That would make it easier. Or where's the go back button or whatever.
Or, I want to do this, but I can't do this because I'm afraid something's going to happen.
Ah,
It's like a lot of times
yeah.
you're like, I'd love to do this, but I'm afraid you're going to spam everybody in my address book, right? I just need to make sure that before it goes out, I can that kind of stuff is what you pick
Yeah,
up. And
that's a
you
great
do
way to
it for
do
the
that.
cost of a pack of 6x4 index cards or 3x5 index cards.
Yeah, you're right. And there's something, I say storyboard, and there are apps where you can build a storyboard, but there's nothing like touch and feel, and if it's simple, it's just that much easier that the user can understand and give that feedback.
We used to, when it was websites only, we would call it a clickable wireframe, which is even better
Interesting.
because now they're doing it
Yep.
in the context of the laptop or their phone. I mean, the closest you can get to actually simulating reality, the better, with the caveats we talked about before. You don't want them hung up on, graphical elements unless they're core to like their ability to navigate the site
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
understand what you want them to do.
Great. I like that. Anything else in your book that you or in your experience that you're recommending that kind of goes against what we have learned in business school or what we have been taught from the drier business books that we've stayed up late at night reading, maybe half sleeping.
Yeah, I mean,
How have you gone against it?
half sleeping is the exact right phrase. Like even the good business books, after about 10 pages, like my eyes start to glaze over. So it's not so much that I'm going against anything you've learned in business school. And listen, I haven't been in business school for 20 years, at least. So a lot of this may be changed, but there is a mindset that you have in larger companies that you need to unlearn. And it may still be that predominantly in a lot of the classes. So you are trained to, do a project to completion and then present it to your boss, and you want to be able to defend it in each way. And that tends to encourage you to dot every I and cross every T and look through all the other possible, things that could happen. That's entirely the wrong approach for a startup because other people will get there far faster than you. Remember, anytime something becomes possible, it's technically possible, regulations have changed. We've had a massive pandemic, so our attitudes have changed in a step level change, not just gradual. Anytime something major changes like that, there are a lot of very bright entrepreneurs, also a lot of stupid entrepreneurs, but there are a lot of very bright entrepreneurs
Sure.
within that group, within
Sure.
that larger group, who are hungry and they're looking for
Yeah.
opportunities.
Yeah.
They've finally found a problem that before was insoluble, but now it's solvable. Right. So they're really excited. So now there's tons of people. So if you're trying to figure out every angle, you're going to end up far behind because there's 20 of them charging, each one of them trying a different angle.
Yeah.
So one of them's going to, or two of them, or three of them are going to find solutions that work while you're still thinking it through. So you have to adopt this mindset of what do I need to do that's quick, preferably free or cheap at least, where I can answer a question quickly and move on. right? It needs to be quick. It needs to be, in many cases, dirty, not like filthy, like, I mean, like, not polished, but you need to be able to make things that are good enough and fast. And remember, we're not in a world where I'm trying to say, well, listen, my seltzer is, ever so slightly sweeter, which means that like it's going to win over like all these people. And we're not fighting for niches. We're not doing incremental improvements. What we're doing here are step level changes. These are things that are so much better that the moment your customer sees them, they should say, oh my God, when can I have that? And if you say it's not ready, and you're like, is it sort of working? Because I'll use it even if it's sort of working. It has to be that painful. So you can push stuff that's, not very well polished if you're really solving a major pain point, and then learn from your audience. In fact, there's a well-known figure in the startup community called Guy Kawasaki. He's known for a lot of great quotes. One of them is a little vulgar. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but I love that one.
You can say it. You
Oh,
say the one you love, and
yeah,
we'll
it is a
put
bucket ship
the
it.
it's what?
It's fuck it, ship it, right? Just
I
send it out. The longer
like it.
version of it, the longer version of it is, if you don't look back at version 1.0 of your startup and cringe at how ugly it was, you waited too long to ship. That's the mentality you have to embrace, which is it's kind of counterintuitive to people who've spent a bunch of time out there, which actually brings me to, sorry, I'm gonna keep rolling a little bit. It actually brings me to the other reason I wrote this as a book rather than as a novel, rather than as a how-to guide. So if you're in a startup or about to start a startup, right, you read, like, stop what you're doing, take a day, read the book. But there's a lot of people who are in corporate jobs and they're like, this is a major issue, it's a problem. I know a lot of people have it. Like, should I drop all of that and go out there and try to make a startup about it?
Good
And
question.
when it's a regular like how-to guide, there's really not a lot for you to get there. You don't know what it feels like to be a founder. You don't know what it feels like to look at your bank account going down every month and you're betting that you can get a product that's saleable before you hit rock bottom. That's not for everybody, right? It works a little better if you have, say, a spouse or a partner who has a stable job with health insurance. And but if they don't, or if both of you are entrepreneurs, that's really hard to make work. So that kind of, what does it feel like, right? Is this right for me? Is it the right time for me? You can't get that any other way. So in a story form, you can, I hope.
Great. Those are great words because you really do have to check in. Do I have the ability to literally, be anxious every day that I am building it and every day I know I'm paying out of these people to do this, and will it be viable? Will it be a viable product? And it isn't for everyone. And it's great that you're mentioning that, as well as the mindset of just get it out. You don't need to figure out all the details, the minimal viable project, to just because other people are doing the same thing. They're putting something together. It may not be beautiful, polished, but if you've done your homework in figuring out how you're going to solve a problem, just get it out there.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Couldn't say it better.
Well, you'll have a whole book that says it
I
much.
can say it in more detail, but that was as good a summary as any.
I would love if you could.
I'm sorry, I lost your audio. Can you repeat that?
My audio is not good.
It's better now.
Is it better? Good. Andrew, I would love for you to tell our listeners how they can get a hold of your book.
I thought you'd never ask. So first of all, it's called The Entrepreneur's Odyssey. I don't think there are any books out there, but if you ever see two of them, number one, it's the one with a really cool maze on the cover with a guy with a chainsaw hacking his way through the maze. And also because I like puns, the subtitle is A Novel Guide to Startup Success.
I like that.
Yeah, so it's on Amazon, just like everything else in the world is on Amazon. That's the easiest way to do it. If you're interested in a little bit more of the backstory or who I am, don't feel obligated, but if you are, you can come to my website. It's Andrew, the letter B as in boy, Ackerman. B is for my middle name, Benjamin, .com. So either way is fine.
Great. Wow, that's great. I think either of these sites, yeah, will be great. Amazon for the book, and it's really been a pleasure to speak with you. I love your some of these stories from the book and the reasons why you've done this. Yeah, thank you. I know our listeners are going to be excited to pick this up.
I hope so. Thank you for having me.
Great. Thank you. You have a great rest of your day.
I will. And you.
Thanks. I'm so grateful that you've listened to the end of this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review it, and share it with your friends. I love teaching insights so that you can have a more impactful and meaningful life. It's my mission to build a thriving community of happy, fulfilled people. Want more? Visit my website at yourspectacularlife.com.